Lake Lawn Resort, a proud supporter of WGTD's Radio Theater. LakeLawnResort.com.
This is WGTD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show is hosted by Felicia King of Quality Plus Consulting and airs the first and third Saturdays of every month.
Good morning. You're listening to Breakfast Bites, and I'm Felicia King. Today's show, we're going to talk about privileged identity management, and yes, this means you and your home computer as well as IT admins. All the concepts are exactly the same. So this would definitely be applicable to even home users that have just one computer. And then we're going to go into some interesting changes going on and some initiatives going on as kind of the battle over social media and censorship. Well, let's get started with this privileged identity management topic. Now, this privileged identity management, let's first define what that is. A privileged identity is something that has some level of elevated privileges, such as an administrative level account or an account that has a particular role to do limited administrative functions on something. So a privileged identity could be your admin login credentials to the network equipment that you have, or it could be the administrator account on your PC or a domain administrator account on a Windows server domain. So that's privileged identity. Now that you get into this more element of complexity associated with that when you start talking about things like Office 365. Now, Microsoft has put in an initiative, effectively, to claim that they wanted everyone to be utilizing on-demand privilege escalation as needed. Now, in the Windows Server space, or even in the home user PC space, you see this with Windows 10 and any of the newer server operating systems, where what you're supposed to be doing is privilege escalating whenever you actually needed those increased rights. Now, when you look at it from a Windows 10 perspective, so your home PC, you should be logging on to your PC as a standard user account, one that does not have the ability to do direct privilege escalation. So direct privilege escalation is where, let's say you set up a Bob account, and your Bob account is what you use to browse the internet, okay? And you do your email with this Bob account. Now, if that Bob account also has administrative privileges, then there is user account control typically in place, which will then require privilege escalation. But in order to privilege escalate, it's literally as simple as just clicking the yes button. And that is, well, it's security theater is what it is, because that really isn't any security at all. And that is why that entire system is bunk. Instead, what should be happening is your Bob account is strictly a user account, and it does not have the ability to privilege escalate as an admin account. If you are going to be logged in as Bob, you would then have a Bob admin account. So your Bob admin account, you would still have the ability to privilege escalate, but in order to do so, you would have to supply alternate credentials that have admin access. So this is the key to privilege escalation and appropriate handling of admin access. So just to recap, you're not browsing the internet, you're not doing email, you're not doing your day-to-day functions as an account that has the ability to privilege escalate, and you do have an admin account, but in order to use it, you have to not only present and provide to the computer a different username, but also a different password than your standard average everyday user account. And by the way, this one thing, this privileged identity separation, turns out to be the most, bar none, the most effective way to keep your systems from getting hacked. And this is not my statement saying this. This is a statement that's coming out of statistical analyses that come from the entire IT security industry and, you know, publications. So, and I agree with it. I mean, you know, if you just think about it in terms of, well, wow, does that statistic, does it smell right, right? Does that seem reasonable based upon all of the firsthand experiential data that we have? And yeah, the absolutely. So, in fact, I can tell you that in the vast majority, I mean, in something in excess of 95% of cases in the last at least 6 years that I've seen, the breaches that occurred were occurring due to credential theft of a credential that had admin rights. And that was specifically based upon improper use of admin rights. So improper uses, for example, the average everyday user account having admin privileges. That's just a really bad idea. Okay, so now we've defined what a privileged identity is. And privileged identity management is kind of, in many ways, what I've already described. It's a matter of only using that privileged identity for what you should be using it for and only at the specific times that you need it for those specific actions. So let's move into that from an extension perspective, where this now we start talking about Microsoft's view of single identity. And this isn't just Microsoft. You see this happening across the board where, and in fact, Facebook has gotten themselves into some incredible hot water with this because they have allowed all kinds of other services to plug in to Facebook, meaning that you could have logged into these other services using a Facebook identity. Now, this wasn't just a one identity approach, but in the background of that, in order to make that happen, Facebook was granting these third-party systems access into people's Facebook profiles and the content therein. So it was a massive breach of data segmentation, and there's been some big problems that have happened out of it. But I think if you just think about this logically and common sense on its face, anytime, and I've actually talked about this on the show before, because the because really Microsoft and Google and these other big aggregators who want to control the world, and let's not, you know, be naive about thinking that that's what's going on, because definitely that is what's going on. They want to be the one identity in charge of everything. They claim that they can make things more secure by having this one identity. And my argument has always been and will continue to be that that's just the stupidest idea ever. Because if you have this one identity, now all it takes is that one thing to get breached, and you've now had everything breached. So the more centralization that exists, the bigger the kitty bank is, the, you know, the bigger the gold pot is that the hackers have to go after because of all of this centralization, then the bigger the risk profile. I mean, just look at the kitty bank that was the Office of Personnel Management database. I mean, it was a massive treasure trove of personally identifiable information, including fingerprints, you know, including the fingerprints of government employees and the entire military. So the fact that that was breached was breached because of single identity. It should have never been a situation where all of that information was even accessible from a single identity. It just shouldn't have happened. But, you know, too many people live their lives based upon thinking that their convenience right now is more important than security. Of course, this explains why people sign up for Facebook to begin with. Because, you know, Zuckerberg goes and calls all the people that actually use Facebook dumb bleepers. Yes, I am censoring myself because I'm sure those of you have that have actually been paying attention already know what Zuckerberg said. It was an extremely derogatory, inappropriate, and foul-mouthed statement that he made about all users of Facebook on top of the word dumb. And that says a lot. And that's the attitude of Facebook in general. You know, they are designing Facebook, and this is not even up for debate. This is well documented that Facebook is designed to be addictive and to induce you to put more of your personally identifiable information out there so that they can then sell it and aggregate it and profit from it. The only way really to deal with that is just to use a security appliance. First of all, don't sign up for a Facebook account. But secondly of all, use a security appliance that just completely 100% blocks it and then only ever access the internet through that security appliance that's just blocking it outright. Because Facebook is embedded in so many things. And even if you don't have an account, if you allow a Facebook cookie onto your systems, then they can still create a data aggregator profile on you and backtrace that to other things. And this has also been well documented. All right. So anyways, it's not just a Microsoft thing is what I'm saying with regards to this single identity push. And so there was this hot debate amongst Microsoft partners recently in the security space. There are, you know, there's a segment of Microsoft partners that focus on security. And there was this hot debate recently about the concept of using one identity versus using separate identities. And Microsoft, some time ago, was promoting this single identity. And they were promoting it without necessarily the caveat that you had to have certain subscriptions in place, such as for Enterprise Mobility Suite and Cloud App Security, and then, of course, have everything programmed correctly. And they also didn't really disclose and talk about the caveats as to how this on-demand privileged identity management escalation is really in effect. And the way that it is on, so first of all, you have to have all of this stuff in place in order to even use that system. You're paying for more licensing, and you have to have all of that pre-configured in order for the system to even work, where you can use one identity. But at its core, somebody all the time, at least one person, must have a full-on admin account 100% of the time available, because the privileged identity system of privilege escalation, where a single identity is used, those requests for privilege escalation must actually be approved by a full admin. So this solution might actually work very well for companies that have 10,000 employees. And maybe they have like regional administrators or, you know, people that they might want to allow to privilege escalate every now and then. So they still fundamentally are keeping, I would say, at a minimum, two people that have full admin access all the time, that have that ability to just, you know, be an admin all the time without privilege escalation. And one would hope that they were using a dedicated, isolated admin workstation for those functions. So the system does not work really in what you call the small and medium business market, the SMB space, and it certainly doesn't work in a home user basis, because we don't have all those fancy additional subscriptions. All of this additional configuration is not there. And again, who is it that is actually supposed to be managing those approvals for privilege escalation? So let's look at another fascinating aspect of this. which is this concept of how do we get, how, where is the risk coming from in terms of this cloud identity, right? Whether we're talking about Office 365 or G Suite or Facebook, whatever it is, where is the risk from this cloud identity coming from? Well, the risk is coming from the bad guys being able to figure out what your login ID is. And then they can try to either spearfish you, or they can try to hack that account. And the biggest number one way that these things are done is through this email mechanism. So that is why it is extremely wise that the admin accounts, especially in a system like Office 365, that they don't even have email enabled. And I'd go even a step further saying that not only do they not have email enabled, but if you did have to have email enabled for them, you would never, ever, ever use that email address for anything. So that way that email address isn't going to become known, because I'm sure this has happened to everybody out there. You get frustrated by how much email spam you're getting, and you think, okay, well, I'm just going to create a new email address so that I don't have to deal with all that junk. And you sign up for one thing using this new email address, and suddenly it starts getting, and when I say suddenly, I don't know, maybe a week or two, certainly within a month, you're going to be getting tons of junk from all over the place. And the only conclusion you can come to when you see that sort of thing happening is, okay, the place that you gave that email address to is breached. They're hacked. And in my experience, it is effectively anyone and everyone out there seems to be hacked all the time. And it's very frustrating to me because, so many of these companies have the resources to not have these problems. And I think in a lot of cases, it's coming from, let's say you're doing business with somebody and you're doing business with a particular person in that organization, you know, a sales rep or something like that. And that sales rep has a phone. They have a mobile device that they have their email on, which of course, then that means that their contacts that exist in their email system, whether we're talking Office 365 or something else, those contacts in their email system are also visible to that phone. And then the phone gets compromised. You know, or they've got some sort of an app that somebody granted, you know, the end user of the phone decided that they were going to grant access to the contacts list. And then every contact in that contact list is completely 100% stolen. And I see this happen all the time. And it's frustrating, because I think that it's effectively impossible anymore to have an email address that isn't just compromised all the time. And so anyways, because of that, you can't use an admin level account, an account that has admin privileges, and give it access to email. And certainly not email that you're actually going to be using for email. It's one thing to have an admin account that's email enabled that you never use for anything. And I can tell you that if you do that approach, you're not going to get any sort of malicious spam on it. It doesn't happen because nobody knows that email address exists. And I even go one step further, which is that I strongly recommend that people don't ever even use all of their admin accounts don't even have the same domain suffix. Yeah, it's actually possible to have your admin account have a completely different domain suffix than what your primary email domain is. And of course, again, huge advantages from this from the perspective that nobody knows what that is. If they don't know what it is, then they can't hack it. I mean, the one area of vulnerability then becomes a compromise through the endpoint where the admin is accessing these systems, right? So we're talking about keystroke loggers and remote access Trojans, command and control devices, these sorts of things that are looking at that. It may even be an interesting piece too. I don't think it's necessarily going to be the case, but it may even be that, like, let's say somebody's using some Huawei equipment, that maybe they've got packet decryptors running on the Huawei equipment and reporting it back to the communist Chinese government. I don't know, but that's certainly a good reason to not use communist Chinese manufactured network equipment. I know I certainly wouldn't. So again, this was a hot debate amongst Microsoft partners who are operating and functioning deeply in the security space. And I thought it was a very interesting discussion because, you know, some of the people were talking about, well, you know, Microsoft was advocating this one identity approach, but then a lot of other people came out and said, you know, including myself, saying, you know, look, that's all great, fine, and dandy if you're in a massive organization that has all of those resources and you have all of that infrastructure and the support mechanism for it, but still, you know, let's not be delusional about the fact that you're always going to have at a minimum one full-on admin who's admin all the time and an account that's always having admin privileges and at least one human being that knows the password to that. And theoretically, you'd also have multi-factor authentication turned on that account as well, one would hope. But that is the minimum baseline, and that system does not scale well at a very, very small scale. I mean, what about all the people that are using Office 365 Personal? How the heck do you do that? So now you're talking about the Office 365 Personal account, the master account is whatever your Outlook.com identity is, or I should say your live.com identity, which is really the same identity as an outlook.com identity nowadays. So that system, because it's a single identity system, you don't have any ability to privilege escalate, really. You don't have the ability to have a separate admin account. And, you know, Adobe, that's an interesting little side mesh of this. Adobe has recently put in what they call the company plan or the corporate plan. Actually, I think they just call it the company plan, which is nice because it really works for something as small as two licenses, right? So that's really cool because then that is a system that completely scales appropriately in a very, very small organization. So this company plan that Adobe has is they allow you to set up a completely separate admin account and then just grant license access to specific user identities. So what Adobe is doing, and I think if you have ever used Adobe Acrobat, you probably want to know this, and this is, I think, some not necessarily widely known information at this point, at least not in the people that I've been encountering. Adobe is no longer providing perpetual licensing. Like, if you needed Adobe Acrobat Pro, you can't get a perpetual license for that software anymore. It's just not possible. I mean, you can if you want to order the 2017 version, but that has a very short life cycle, and it's not going to have the latest features. It's just kind of pointless, actually, to be buying two-year-old software. So if you're going to have Adobe Acrobat or Acrobat Pro, or really most any of Adobe's paid products these days, it's a subscription system. And we are actually an Adobe partner, and I looked into whether or not it would even make sense to buy through distribution. And I think it does if you're doing it at a very large scale, but, like, let's say you needed only 30 or less licenses of Adobe Acrobat Pro or some flavor of Adobe licensing. At that point, I would strongly recommend that somebody just goes out to Adobe's website and goes on the company plan. The company plan that they have has an incredibly nice, very well built out management, you know, administrative license subscription management website. So that I think they've done a really good job with that. And again, it's you create this admin account where you're using that identity to actually buy all the subscriptions, buy the licenses, and then you can create these accounts for your users and then allocate licenses to them, and then they can self-manage from there. It's a really nice system. And I found out that that system is not accessible if you buy through an Adobe partner who then buys through distribution. So really, I mean, I think if you're going to, unless you're going to buy a mass quantity of Adobe licensing, you should just go direct to Adobe.com, and then you have full control over the subscriptions as well. So that's a good example of a way that privileged identity management can be done. But again, you have to really know the details of how to do this stuff. I just haven't seen it written or documented anywhere, really. It's something that's kind of experiential, and you have to have these security instincts about it and saying, well, it should work this way. And so that's why I like to cover these particular topics on this show. So I hope that helps with regards to your privileged identity management stuff. Some final points on that is, of course, use multi-factor authentication on anything. I would recommend even multi-factor authentication on your standard average everyday user accounts if you can possibly get it. Certainly, it should be mandatory for administrative accounts, right? And the one thing that does concern me about multi-factor authentication, though, is that I think that the MFA mechanisms that are smartphone-based are vulnerable to device cloning or device hacking. Now, we talked about this on the simjacking component a few shows ago, but this also applies if you happen to go through Customs and Border Patrol, because Customs and Border Patrol, regardless of what you think your rights are, they think that they have the right to just take your device and clone it. And in fact, they don't even have to give it back to you. You would have to hire a lawyer to go after Customs and Border Patrol to try to regain possession of your device. And if you fight back or object to them in any way while you are presenting yourself physically at Customs and Border Patrol, then they can just incarcerate you. And they can hold you for 48 hours without... really without charging you for anything. So it can just destroy your whole day, weekend, and week. And, well, it could just destroy all kinds of things after that. So I think you have to really be questioning whether or not that is a device that you even want to take with you as you're going through Customs and Border Patrol. Because if they can just clone the device, then they can have a loadable clone of your device that then has the multi-factor authentication applications on there. So the one thing I wish Adobe would do is I wish that Adobe would have a better multi-factor authentication mechanism. Right now, their MFA mechanism is strictly SMS based, so it's very vulnerable to the simjacking component. All right, well, let's finish off with the social media issues with regards to censorship that they've been doing. It's been so bad lately that not only are all kinds of people being deplatformed simply because they espouse views and beliefs, not that are criminal, I might add, but simply views and beliefs that these social media tech giants disagree with. Here's a great example of one, which is that there's an organization that publishes about vaccines and the dangers of various vaccines, and they were publishing this information specifically just to help people become informed, you know, which is supposed to actually be the law according to the Nuremberg laws. You're supposed to have